Earth and Sky.
Welcome to Clear Voices. I'm Jorge Salazar. Astronomers are racing to find planets outside our solar system, worlds such as Earth, possibly with life. But why are they doing it? And what will it mean if life is found outside our solar system? I spoke with Alex Volsten, professor of astronomy and astrophysics at Penn State University. Based on observations made in 1990, Volsten co-discovered the first planet outside our solar system. Since then, over 250 worlds beyond our solar neighborhood have been found. Volsten spoke with me about his recent discovery of a planet about the size of Jupiter, orbiting a sun not much unlike our own, 300 million light-years from Earth. Here is Alex Volsten.
Dr. Volsten, welcome to Earth and Sky.
My pleasure, of course.
So tell me a little bit about this recent discovery of an extrasolar planet that was made by scientists out at Penn State. What did you find here? What's new?
It was actually about 3 years ago when we decided to carry out the survey. And the idea behind it was to start looking for planets around evolved stars. That is, stars similar to what our sun will become in a few billion years. And the motivation for it was twofold. One idea behind it was to try to figure out what happens to planetary systems when their parent stars begin to change as they age and ultimately become white dwarfs at their death time, so to speak. And the other motivation was to study frequency of occurrence of planets around massive stars. The problem is that with the traditional radial velocity method, which is the Doppler effect-based method to look for planets around other stars, the one that has been most successful so far, is not efficient when you go for stars more massive than our sun. And that has to do with the fact that they are hotter, they rotate faster, they have less spectral lines that you use to detect planets. And then when those stars begin to die and swell up to become giants, they develop those cool atmospheres, which again generate a lot of spectral lines that we can use in the Doppler effect-based radial velocity method. So that way you can sort of sneak in through the back door and study planet formation and evolution in massive star environment, not quite directly, just by waiting until those stars become old enough to be useful in that sort of study. So we decided to do this, and 3 years later, that is just about now, we've got our first discovery, and there are more coming. So, you know, it's actually quite exciting. Of course, we are not the only ones who do this, but we are early enough into this game to hope to really become leaders in it.
Tell me a little bit about this new planet that was confirmed by your team. Whereabouts is it? And also maybe talk a little bit more about how it is that we can see something that is so far away.
The planet itself goes around a star which is some 300 light years away from here in the constellation Perseus. The star is a rather massive one. It's about 2.5 times more massive than our sun. So it's a bigger star, and much, much older. It is already in the red giant phase. That is, it already is on its way to the ultimate fate of becoming white dwarf. The planet around it is about 4.5 times the mass of Jupiter. So it is like Jupiter, but it is a little bigger and more massive and goes around that star just about once a year, 360 days. That's pretty close to a year. Its distance from the star is a little larger than that of our Earth from the sun. Now, how do we do this? How do we find planets around stars that are so far away? And in fact, without seeing the planets at all, it's an indirect method. The method is based on the Doppler effect. And Doppler effect is, I think, everybody's familiar with it, not necessarily by name, by just by experience. I mean, if you stand at the side of the road and watch the car approaching you honking all the time, then you'll hear actually the pitch changing from high to low as the car approaches you, then passes by you and starts receding. So that's the Doppler effect. The pitch doesn't really change. It's just the fact that there's a relative non-zero velocity between you standing at the edge of the road and the moving car that causes the effect. Exactly the same happens to stars and us astronomers watching them. Stars moving in space generate that relative velocity between us observers and the star, and that changes the color of light. That is, when the star approaches you, the light becomes bluer, and the spectral lines in the spectra that we watch move toward the blue, that is, toward shorter wavelengths. And then when it starts going away from you, the opposite happens, that is, the spectral lines move toward the red, that is, longer wavelengths. And so if you envision a planet going around the star, it's not exactly that the star sits still and the planet goes around it. It's just that both of them go around the point in space which we call center of mass of the system. So in response to the gravitational pull of a planet, the star wobbles in space around that center of mass just a little bit. And what we detect is that motion, because then the relative velocity between us and the star changes, and that makes those changes from red to blue and from blue to red periodically in the spectrum of the star. And with our instrumentation and telescopes, we can detect that motion, and that is how we actually deduce the presence of planets based on that effect indirectly.
I understand that you were part of the science team that discovered the very first planet ever found outside of our solar system.
Oh, that was 15 years ago, yes.
Would you like to maybe talk a little bit about how things have changed, I guess, in your line of work?
Well, that discovery that I was really very, very lucky to have made, and that was in 1992, was of a planet around a neutron star. So it was very, very unexpected, because the general expectation based on what we knew at that time was that someone will actually run into a planet going around a solar type star, a star of the familiar kind, just like our sun. Instead, the first planet, it was actually planets, the first planets around an object other than our sun was found around a pulsar, a neutron star, a dead object left over from a supernova explosion of a very massive star. So that discovery actually sent a very strong signal to all of us, telling us that the world of planets around other stars is going to be very exotic and certainly not of the sort that we had expected at that time. That is, you know, it sort of said that you could find planets around all kinds of exotic objects, not only sun-like stars, and that would include pulsars, maybe even black holes, red giants, red dwarfs, white dwarfs, all kinds of stars. And indeed, 3 years later in 1995, as many of us know, the first discovery of the planet around a solar-type star was made. And again, it was something entirely unexpected, because the orbital period or a year of a planet going around that star was not the expected, you know, 10 years, 12 years, something Jupiter-like, but it was only 4 days. So, and to this day, the rich story of planet discovery around other stars throughout the last decade has been telling us basically the same story, that world of planets out there is very, very exotic. It will still require a lot of time and a lot of new discoveries to actually fully characterize it and understand the planet formation and evolution around all kinds of stars. So it's been a continuing surprise all the way throughout, and that is actually one of the things that makes it so exciting. Even more exciting is, of course, the fact that at the end of all this, what hopefully awaits us is the discovery of life elsewhere, and this is really the big prize.
Now, could you maybe talk a little bit about the collaborative effort here involved? There's, in addition to Pennsylvania State University, there's NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and there's also the Polish Ministry of Science and Higher Education, all these different organizations involved.
As far as collaboration goes, these days it is really very, very difficult to do anything in science just, you know, alone, by yourself. So it's usually big projects require collaboration. Sometimes they're very big collaborations, sometimes they're not. In our case, initially we had a lot of help with getting things started from JPL and Caltech, but now as everything has sort of begun to run smoothly, really my main collaborators are my Polish colleagues at the Nicholas Copernicus University in Toruń, which is actually where I come from. And then there I have, or they have, a group of researchers and students who have actually done a lot of most important basic work on the data collection, that is, observations, analysis, and all that. So actually they play a very central part in all this, and that is in the framework of collaboration between us here at Penn State, at the Department of Astronomy, and astrophysics and their university. And, you know, it's really very interesting and actually quite pleasing for me to watch how this collaboration has developed and how it has helped to start a big planetary group in Poland, which actually is doing the world-class work now. So to me, it's a great satisfaction. Speaking of the telescope itself, the Hubble Everly telescope is a 10-meter class telescope. Its diameter is 9, usable diameter is 9 meters, 9.2 to be exact. And it is a very specific kind of a telescope because you cannot really steer it in all directions just like all general-purpose telescopes do. Well, telescopes like that cannot do everything, and you cannot observe the whole sky with them, I mean, this whole sky in your hemisphere. But they are very efficient in projects like the one we have been conducting. That is, in the telescope, which is only partially steerable, you can cue stars in the most suitable way so that they drift by the field of view of your telescope and you sort of observe them one after another. And if you put together your cue efficiently enough, the telescopes like that are really ideally suited to do big projects, survey-type projects like ours. And the diameter of that telescope makes it one of the largest in the world. So, you know, we can reach out quite far into our galaxy to observe all kinds of objects. So we here at Penn State are really, I think, the lucky people who have a big share in the telescope.
Earlier, you mentioned your Polish science colleagues involved in these efforts.
Yeah.
And word has it that you and your colleagues are the equivalent of rock stars in Poland. Is that accurate?
Well, I guess in my case, the thing is that, you know, no matter how you look at it, I just ended up or was lucky enough or have been lucky enough to end up being a discoverer of the first planetary system beyond our sun. And that made me, a little bit of a star in my homeland or some sort of mini celebrity or something like that, which is actually a very enjoyable state of affairs. And I actually use it to try to help science in my homeland any way I can. So, you know, I myself am sort of a happy person because of that.
That was astronomer Alex Volshtin of Penn State University. I'm Jorge Salazar for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.